Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's November the 6th. We are continuing with our redemption class. We're in Parshas Va'era. And last time we read from page 320 to 322, we read through all of the lineage of Levi, really Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, to tell us who Moshe and Aaron are and where they come from. That's the point of this whole discussion. So we covered a lot of the various details last time, and we left a few things hanging which I want to cover this evening. One is the reference in Pasuk Chaf Hey, verse 25, where it says, Elazar the son of Aaron, took for himself from the daughters of Putiel as a wife, and she bore for him Pinchas. In fact, that's the last one in the list here. And we have him on the board, the one that is traced down the furthest. We go from Levi to Amram and Yocheved, to Kohas, Amram, and then Aaron, and then Elazar, and then Pinchas, all the way down to Pinchas. So that's the one that gets the furthest, that's extrapolated out the furthest, which implies that that's the most significant one. So it says that he married from the daughters of Putiel. And we said we'd discuss what does it mean for the daughters of Putiel. It's interesting, doesn't mention her name, and it doesn't even say the daughter of Putiel. Like you would have expected, if Putiel was a significant person, then tell us he took the daughter of Putiel as a wife.
Or a daughter.
Bas Putiel. Something like that. But it says he took from the daughters of Putiel for him for a wife. There are other women mentioned in this whole discussion. One is Yocheved, who is the daughter of Levi, who Amram, her nephew, marries her. We talked about that last time. And also the wife of Aaron is mentioned, Elisheva, who is the sister of Nachshon and the daughter of Aminadav. And we talked about last time how they were a very, very prominent family, the leaders of the Jewish people in the tribe of Yehuda. Here we get someone who doesn't get a name, just the daughter from the daughters of Putiel. So our sages tell us that Putiel refers to two lines, that Elazar's wife came from two well-known lines, lineages, if that's a word, in the Jewish people. One is from Yosef, and one is from Yisro. One is from Yosef, and one is from Yisro. Now, how do we get that from the word Putiel, and how do you get them both? So, you get them both because one would be the daughter, the woman who he married from the daughters of Putiel. So either her father's line, thank you, either her father's line came from Yosef and her mother's line came from Yisro, or the other way around. Her father's line came from Yisro and her mother's line came from Yosef. It's one or the other. The Gemara does not pin it down to say which it is, because it doesn't really matter. The point is that she comes from both lines. So why would the word Putiel, the name Putiel, why would that connote Yosef's line and Yisro's line? So our sages explain that the word Putiel, the root, is a root that has a pay and a tess in it. I don't even know how to say it. There's the word pat or pay tess. You're going to have to find a Hebrew root that has a pay and a tess in it. There aren't that many Hebrew roots that have those letters in it. So our sages say that it comes from the word lifatim, and it comes from the word lifatpet. What do those two things mean? Lifatim means to fatten, as in fattening an animal for slaughter. Lifatim. And lifat paint means, it's a very hard word to translate, it means to like to chip away at, to, there's a better, there's a better phrase than that. I'll tell you the context and you can tell me if there's a better word to describe it. Let's talk about the first one. Lifatim, to fatten, it means to fatten an animal for slaughter, because Yisro was a before he met Moshe, actually right before Moshe met him, Yisro was a priest for Avodah Zarah, for paganism, and he used to fatten animals for slaughter, for idolatry, for paganism. So therefore the word Putiel has reference to Yisro, that he used to do that. That's not a very positive reference to him, but it does have a reference to Yisro. That's Lifatim. Lifat paint means to like chip away at, because Yosef, when he was in the house of Potiphar and he was enticed by the wife of Potiphar to sin, he was mefat peit b'yitzro. He chipped away at his evil inclination, at his desires. He maintained his control and chipped away at his desires. He continually kept them at bay. That was lifat peit. He was mefat peit b'yitzro. That's a positive connotation, that he was able to control his desires in a very difficult situation, where over a long period of time, a person who had complete control over his life, his master's wife, who had complete control over him, who could easily have had him jailed or beaten or executed, she could have done anything to him, and she was trying to entice him and he managed to stay away. So that's a positive connotation. Later on, when Pinchas has his great moment, when he kills the Nasi, the prince of the tribe of Shimon, with the incident later on with the women of Midian, who are trying to do the same thing that was happening to Yosef, they're trying to entice the Jewish men. And later on we'll read the story, we'll study the story of Pinchas. There was a plague amongst the Jewish people because of what was going on, and Pinchas killed Zimri, the leader of the tribe of Shimon, who was involved in the immorality, and that stopped the plague. When it happened, because Pinchas had killed someone of such prominence, there were Jews who were saying that Pinchas murdered a great man, and Pinchas was a terrible person. And in degrading Pinchas, they said, you know who that Pinchas is? He's the one whose ancestor used to fatten cows for slaughter, for idolatry, for paganism. He comes from Benos Putiel. He comes from the daughters of Putiel, from Yisro, who had very humble beginnings as a priest for paganism. Rather than invoke Pinchas's other line, which is that of Yosef, who controlled himself in the face of immorality, whereas the person he killed was not controlling himself in the face of immorality. So really Pinchas, because he comes from Yosef, was the perfect person to stop the plague and stop what Zimri was doing wrong. But the people who were degrading Pinchas were focusing on his other line. We're going to discuss that in great depth when we get to Parshas Pinchas, please God. But for now, let's just make mention of the fact that he comes from both lines. So that means that Pinchas really has three prominent lines. He has his father's line, which is Elazar, who comes from Aaron. He's a Kohen. So that's very significant, of course. And then on his mother's side, there are two prominent lines. There's that of Yosef and that of Yisro. The fact that a negative reference to Yisro is being used, that doesn't seem to resonate. If we're trying to show this very important and illustrious line of the Jewish people. These illustrious names that we have here on the board, they're being listed. And Pinchas seems to be the most illustrious, or his line is the most illustrious, because that's the one that's carried furthest, all the way down to his generation. None of the other ones are carried that far. So to mention that Elazar married from the daughters of Putiel and have somehow a degrading connotation from that is a little difficult. We would have expected everything here to be focused on the positive. And therefore it would seem to me that what is actually going on here is that we are being told that Pinchas comes from Aaron. That's number one. That's wonderful. But Pinchas also comes from Yosef. That's really wonderful. So you have the lines of Levi, Aaron, mixed with the line of Yosef. So you have a wonderful product. You have the product of Pinchas. But not only that, you also have the line of Yisro, who had such humble beginnings, where he was a pagan priest, and yet he threw it all away and became a Jew. And not only did he become a Jew, but who did his daughter marry?
Moshe.
Moshe married the daughter of Yisro. And so Elazar, let's look at the line carefully here. Elazar, who is a nephew of Moshe. Moshe and Aaron are brothers. And Elazar is Aaron's son. Moshe's nephew is Elazar. And Elazar marries from the daughters of Putiel. Moshe's wife is also of the daughters of Putiel. So whether they married sisters or whether Elazar married a granddaughter of Yisro, not a daughter of Yisro, it doesn't have to be that it was the same generation. But Elazar married from the line of Yisro, and Moshe also married a daughter of Yisro. So he is following in his uncle's footsteps in marrying from a family that came from a place that was so much the antithesis of what Moshe and Aaron stand for, but they managed to realize that it's the wrong path, threw it away, and became Jews. And Elazar marries from that line as well. So Pinchas comes really from three significant lines. From that of Levi all the way up, he comes from Yosef, and he comes from Yisro as well. Yisro not being a born Jew, but rather converting to Judaism. Nevertheless, that's where he comes from. Now, even though, as I mentioned, you don't have converts before the Torah is given. You have, anytime a person marries into the family, then they're part of the family, as we've mentioned before several times. But Yisro himself becomes a convert after the Torah is given, as we'll see later when we get to the story of Yisro. Yeah.
So, Eliezer marries the daughter of Elazar, marries the daughter of Putiel. But how does Putiel fit in with Yisro?
So, from the daughters of Putiel means that that Putiel is actually two different people.
Oh.
That's the point. Putiel refers to Yosef, because Yosef was Mefat Pit. Oh. He chipped away at his evil inclination. And Putiel also refers to Yisro, who at his inception, and before he became a Jew, was someone who was a pagan priest.
Oh, so Putiel's not a real name.
That's right.
Person.
That's right. And that's why it says from the daughters of Putiel. If he didn't marry the daughter of Putiel, because Putiel is not a man.
Okay. Right.
Putiel is two different people who came together. And it's interesting that the same word would refer to both Yosef and to Yisro, which seems to imply that Yosef and Yisro have a bond that is not so readily understood, because the same name can refer to both of them. So that's also something to bear in mind. As I said, when we get to Pinchas, we'll talk about him. When we get to Parshas Pinchas, and if we get to Yisro, we'll talk about that much more in depth. But this is referred back to. This is the only place in the Chumash where the name Putiel appears, if I don't miss my guess. I'm pretty sure that's true. And when we get to both Yisro later on, and we'll get to Pinchas much later on, the commentaries are going to refer us back to here, to the daughter from the Elazar took from the daughters of Putiel. So we'll discuss that in great detail then. Yeah.
So if you did the line of Joseph, he would come down to this daughter.
That's right.
Who married Eleazar.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Okay. And then eventually Pinchas. That's right. Okay. So Pinchas is ultimately a descendant, although not from his sons, but through his daughters from Yosef. That's right. That's right. One of the other points that we did not finish last time was, why is it that if we're trying to show the line of Moshe and Aaron, because that was the whole point of this whole discussion, Ela Rashi Ve'Savosam, these are the heads of their families, getting down to Moshe and Aaron, why are the tribes of Reuven and Shimon mentioned as well? The Torah begins by telling us Reuven and his sons, Shimon and his sons. That's Reuven is mentioned in Pasuk Yudal, verse 14. Shimon is mentioned in the next Pasuk, verse 15, Tesvav. And then, from Tezayin 16 all the way through Chafei 25, we get Levi. So Levi gets all the print. But we also mention Reuven and Shimon. It does not continue with the rest of the tribes. Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher. Doesn't mention any of them. It only mentions Reuven briefly, Shimon briefly, and then Levi with great detail. Why mention Reuven and Shimon at all? The whole point here was to get to Aaron and Moshe. All the commentaries discuss this, and various answers are given. I'm going to rattle off for you some of the ideas that the other commentaries say, and then I'm going to tell you what I believe is the simple, most direct explanation to this question. So the commentaries say various things. One explanation is that the Torah is contrasting Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven only gets a little bit of discussion. Shimon only gets a little bit of discussion. Levi gets all the detail to show us how Levi was greater than his older brothers. Look how great Levi became, that he has all these illustrious descendants, while Reuven and Shimon only get a little bit. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that if the Torah would only list Levi, it would imply that Levi was the oldest. Now, we know that Levi wasn't the oldest. We know that from before. We know from when they were born, and they would have been listed before. They were listed in Parashas Vayigash. They were listed in Parashas Shmos. We know that Levi wasn't the oldest. Nevertheless, the Torah doesn't want to present something in a way that would be misleading. So it doesn't want to present just Levi. It wants to show you Reuven, Shimon. Okay, now let's talk about Levi. That's another explanation. A third explanation is that back in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov gave blessings to all of his children on his deathbed, he gave wonderful blessings to Yehuda, to Yisachar, to Zevulun, to Dan, Naphtali, to Yosef. He gave wonderful blessings. But his three oldest sons he did not bless. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Now, we explained then, and you can always go back and listen to it online, we explained then how what Yaakov said to them was not a curse, it was actually the way that they could reach their own potential. He gave them, he limited them in certain ways, but those limitations were meant to give them the ability to grow. And they weren't what we would call a curse. Instead, they were methods for them to grow. And that's what we spoke about when we did it in Parshas Vayechi. Nevertheless, they're not overt blessings. It's not like like with Yehuda and with Yosef, you'll have wonderful this and wonderful that, etc., etc., etc. You don't find that with Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So Rashi says over here that since these three tribes did not get blessed by Yaakov in Parshas Vayechi, therefore the Torah over here lists all three of them to show that they are, in fact, important, significant, and they shouldn't get the short end of the deal, that they also have importance. That's what Rashi says. Now, it seems to me that if we're going to take the most direct and obvious explanation for why Reuven and Shimon are listed, I'm going to tell you the most direct and obvious way to read it, but it needs explanation. Let's take a very close look at this. Start with Pasuk Gidal, verse 14 on page 320. Ela Rashay Ves Avosam. These were the heads of their fathers' houses. Now, who is their fathers' houses? Who are we talking about? These were the heads of their fathers' houses. Who is their? What's that pronoun referring to?
Well, looks to me like it's referring to the children of Israel.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, because the previous pasuk mentioned. Let's read the previous pasuk, the previous verse, 13, Yud Gimel. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe vel Aaron. Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron. Vayitzavem al Bnei Yisrael, and he commanded them to the Bnei Yisrael, vel Paro Melech Mitzrayim, and to Paro the king of Egypt, Lotzias Bnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, to take the Jews out of Egypt. Then it says, and these are the heads of their fathers' houses. So Dina is suggesting the heads of whose fathers' houses? The Jews, all the Jews. The problem with that is that it only lists the three, it doesn't list all 12. And also at the very end, when you move to Pasuk Chavav 26, it ends off, who are on Moshe, they are on Moshe, etc.
It's implying the heads of Moshe, not Moshe.
Right. So it seems that what we're trying to do is show the heads of the fathers' houses of Moshe and Aaron.
Right.
Trying to show where they come from. Is that what you wanted to say?
I wanted to say that it's the fathers was in plural here. So
yeah.
The fathers cannot refer to Yaakov. It has to refer to the generation after Yaakov.
Okay.
That's the first generation we have plural fathers.
Okay.
So that would mean that their fathers, it has to be the generation after Yaakov's sons.
And that would be?
It has to be Yaakov's
the 12 tribes.
Well, no, the 12 tribes are his sons.
Grandsons, right.
Okay. Right.
Right, so it has to be in the grandson's generation. Now, are you saying that among the grandson's generation, refers only to Moshe and Aaron?
Well, what Dina is suggesting is that it's all of them, all of them. It would be all of the grandson's generations, except that we only have three listed. We only have three.
We only have three fathers' families.
Right, right. It seems to me that, although it's possible, that you're right, and then for whatever reason it stopped after Levi. But it seems to me from the end of this paragraph, where it talks only about Moshe and Aaron, that the point of this whole thing was to bring up Moshe and Aaron, and that this is the heads, these are the fathers of Moshe and Aaron. Now that doesn't make any sense. Moshe and Aaron's father was Amram, whose father was Levi. Reuven and Shimon, who are Levi's brothers, would not be fathers of Moshe and Aaron. Or were they?
Wait, if we did the grandsons of Yaakov, we'd be starting with Kahas.
Okay. But you're still not going to have Moshe, and you're not going to have Reuven and Shimon.
Right.
Yeah. So, it seems to me that the Torah is saying that Moshe and Aaron came from Levi, and they came from Reuven, and they came from Shimon. They came from Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Now, what does that mean? They came from Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. They didn't. They came from Levi. They didn't come from Reuven and Shimon.
Levi learned from his brothers.
Okay. So we know that you don't have to biologically come from someone for that person to be considered your parent. We know this for certainty. Why? Because we all have four mothers. We have Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Now, we know with certainty that none of us biologically descend from both Rachel and Leah. Mm-hmm. It's either Rachel or Leah. Rachel had two of the tribes. Leah had six of the tribes. In fact, some of us may not biologically descend from either one of them. Because four of the tribes don't come biologically from either Rachel or Leah.
Right.
They come from Bilhah and Zilpah. Right. Yet, we say that we have four mothers. Right. Four matriarchs. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. So, what does that mean? That means that Rachel and Leah are the ones who are the matriarchs of our nation. They're the ones who forged the nation. And they embedded within the nation whatever traits come from the matriarchs. Whether you biologically descend from them or not is irrelevant. If you're part of the Jewish people, you come from Rachel and from Leah. A convert to the Jewish people also comes from all of them. Even though, biologically, the convert certainly does not. But once a person is part of the Jewish people, then they are the heir to those traits that have been embedded in the Jewish people that come from all the patriarchs and matriarchs. I am suggesting, perhaps, that Moshe and Aaron actually descend from Levi biologically, but from Reuben and Shimon as well. Now, how would that be? In what way do I mean that? For that matter, you could say they descend biologically from all 12 tribes. Why only Reuben and Shimon? So it would seem to me that what Rashi says really is the clue to this whole thing. As I mentioned to you, Rashi says, why list these three? Because since these are the three that Yaakov did not bless overtly, they're the three that Yaakov really felt he needed to limit or to direct rather than bless. Therefore, they're listed over here. Well, how does listing them over here compensate for Yaakov not blessing them? I mean, after all, they're not given a blessing over here. They're just listed. I said to you, well, it's to show how important they are. Yeah, but we know they're important. They've been listed in other places. What is listing them here? How does that make up for the fact that Yaakov didn't bless them? What did Reuven do that because of that, Yaakov didn't bless him?
Did it tell him?
What's that?
With the Dutayim?
No.
There were rash beds.
Okay, he switched the beds. After Rachel died, and Yaakov moved his bed into the tent of Bilhah, which was Rachel's maid, he moved Yaakov's bed into the tent of Leah, his mother. Because he said, even though my mother was considered secondary to Rachel, but my mother is not going to be secondary to Rachel's maid. So he moved Yaakov's bed. Now we explained at the time that moving the bed was a symbolic gesture. It didn't do anything. Obviously when Yaakov came home, he found his bed in the wrong tent. But it was to show, it was Reuven showing his disagreement with Yaakov. Yaakov says he's pachas kamaim. He overreacted and reacted. He was impetuous. He should not have done that. That's what Yaakov says. What's that?
Yeah, it is 8 o'clock.
Oh, it's 8 o'clock right now?
Yeah, and that's why you're changing. Okay.
So, we're right in the middle of a thought. Yeah. Okay, no. So we're going to have to continue the thought next time. I see no other way of doing it. Mm-hmm. But, okay, we'll have to continue.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.